We're talking about some intriguing new research that could lead to a drug that could more or less cure us of love and related heartaches. While we're a long way off from medications that would target one specific romantic relationship, there are existing drugs that interfere with some of the specific aspects of romance, like sexual desire and connection, and brain science could point the way to further developments. Researchers are looking into how these and other medications prescribed, maybe in a special timed way, could become, in effect, an anti-love drug. Here to explain this research is Brian D. Earp. He's research fellow at the Oxford Uehiro Center for Practical Ethics. Brian, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me. Hello.
Well, when we first read about this around here, the first thing that we thought of when thinking about an anti-love or a fix-it drug is the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. A company helps people erase painful memories. Here's a clip.
Why remember a destructive love affair? Here at Lacuna, we have perfected a safe, effective technique for the focused erasure of troubling memories. Our patented non-surgical procedure will rid you of painful memories and allow you a new and lasting peace of mind you never imagined possible.
Brian, I know we're not at the point of removing a specific string of memories. What are we talking about in post-love, anti-love medications?
Well, to follow up on the example of memory modification, this provides a good lesson for how these drugs might work, because many of them might not be developed for the specific purpose of sort of blocking or diminishing feelings of love, but might potentially have those effects based on drugs that were designed for other purposes. So to explain that, memory modification is something that scientists are working on right now as a treatment for post-traumatic stress disorder. So soldiers coming back from war, having these traumatic memories, and scientists are very interested in seeing how can we try to basically block or deaden or dull the traumatic aspect of these past memories. Well, if we have that capacity, if that is available, and it looks like we can partially achieve this effect, you can imagine that some people might think, well, I have traumatic memories from a relationship that I was in, very much as was dramatized in that movie. And so this is the sort of thing that's going to be more and more a focus for research moving forward. And memory modification would just be one aspect of that.
And you look at love and the brain, kind of pro and con in a lot of ways. Let's get to the basics. The poets don't write about oxytocin levels and things like that. How much is love coming from specific weird bits of our brain that we can find, measure, and maybe turn on and off?
Well, in a kind of trivial sense, everything that we experience is explainable in terms of events that are going on in our brains. So unless you think that our feelings and our emotions and our attachments to other people are sort of floating off above our heads somewhere in a kind of magical other realm.
It feels that way sometimes.
Well, it does, of course. You know, all of our personal experiences feel like they're kind of, you know, coming from our soul in some way. But what scientists are starting to uncover is that whatever your conception of love is, however you experience it, if you interfere with brain systems that are related to those kind of higher level experiences, you can affect changes in them. So they started doing research in this area with simpler animal systems. So humans are very complex. We have a lot going on that some other animals don't. But they found that they could manipulate whether these little rodents called voles would form attachments with each other, basically whether they would form a pair bond, like a monogamous pair bond. And when they started to analyze the parts of the brain that were controlling this behavior in these animals, they saw that they could manipulate it by either blocking the effects of these brain chemicals or by introducing these brain chemicals. And they could basically make them form an attachment or not. Now, humans are more complicated. It's not clear whether we have the exact same machinery going on in our brains, but a lot of scientists think we have pretty similar structures there. And there's now some research coming out suggesting that we might be able to kind of enhance or diminish the same sorts of parts of the brain that exist in these other animals, potentially, you know, increasing or decreasing our feelings of attachment, lust, love, sort of across a range of conceptions about how we actually kind of think about and conceptualize our experience of love, which, of course, is the sort of thing that poets are writing about.
And one element that maybe might make people feel a little uncomfortable, apparently parts of the brain involved in romantic relationships are similar to the parts of the brain involved in addiction. How similar are those two situations in terms of how our brains work?
Well, there's been some recent research which suggests that the feeling of being romantically in love with someone is very similar to what it's like to experience the effects of certain drugs that are sometimes called addictive drugs. These would be drugs like cocaine and so on. Basically, the experience of being in love and also the experience of some of these drugs floods our reward system in our brain with chemicals like dopamine, which people have heard about. And as with drugs, sometimes relationships can be so pleasurable in a sense, in that they make us want to keep returning to that person, that it can kind of overwhelm our better judgment about other areas in our lives. And so some people describe their experience of being in certain relationships as being very much like an addiction. So that sort of as a cliche or as a metaphor has been around for a while. But what's interesting is that scientists are starting to demonstrate that in terms of what's going on in the brain, it's very similar in terms of how the brain chemicals are acting when you're addicted to a person as when you're addicted to a drug.
And one possible application of medications could be to end that addiction, whether it's to an unrequited love or post-breakup, or even, I've seen suggestions, a connection, that addiction to someone, an abusive partner in a harmful relationship. How would that work? How would medications work to help break those?
Yeah, so I think sometimes people think that if you're in love with someone, you kind of should just follow your feelings, that there's some sort of deeper truth to that feeling of love. And of course, in many cases, that might be true. But also in the case of a domestic abuse situation, sometimes our feelings can lead us in the wrong direction. And we know that for many people, they might be in really dangerous situations, but they feel so attached to the person that they can't really pull themselves away. And they might really continue to be in a situation that's really threatening to their overall well-being. And so in this sort of situation, you might think there's a really good reason to try to change the feelings. There's a really good reason to try to pull yourself away from this other person. And if some of these drugs that we've been doing some research into could have that effect, then there might be a good moral reason to use them in some cases. Now, how might they work? Well, there are current drugs that have side effects that already achieve some of these outcomes. So one example is antidepressant medication. Now, a well-known side effect for some forms of antidepressant medication is that it can interfere with libido, so it can basically lower your sex drive. And this is usually considered a side effect, obviously not something that people are seeking out when they use this drug. But another thing it can do for some people is it can sort of block their higher-level feelings of care or concern or worry about their partner, for example. And so many people describe the effects of antidepressant medication as being sort of negative for their romantic partnership. And again, that's seen as a side effect, something bad that they don't want to happen. But on the other hand, if you were in a relationship that you wanted to end and you actually were seeking to try to diminish or block these feelings of attachment, then we have a kind of proof of principle in that we have currently existing drugs that, at least for some people, do in fact have that kind of effect. And the question is, could we harness this information and try to figure out why it's happening in some cases and use it deliberately for cases where people are in, as we said, violent or abusive relationships, and they're actually seeking for a way to turn off those feelings?
In a less dramatic scenario, most of us, I think, have been through some kind of painful breakup or another. Is there use? Would it be the same kind of drugs to help break that attachment, take away the edge of the sorrow of the breakup?
So that's the sort of outcome that seems possible and even likely based on the way that these drugs are shaping up. The question is going to be whether that's a good idea or under what conditions it would be a good idea. So you can sort of imagine that if you've gone through a terrible relationship and you've gone through a breakup that's been really hard, that you might be tired of feeling sad all the time and you want to turn to a drug to try to, as you said, take the edge off those feelings. But of course, sometimes the reason why we're feeling that way is because it's our brains trying to tell us that we need to pay attention to what happened. You know, why are we having all this suffering? Well, maybe we need to learn something from that. So there might be some cases where the suffering based on a relationship is so extreme and so prolonged that it's not instrumental to helping you learn and grow. But I think one thing to be very cautious about, if and when these drugs become available, is people turning to them as sort of a quick fix, when what they really need to do is to kind of process that suffering and make sense of it in their lives.
We're talking to Brian Earp from Oxford University about the potential for an anti-love drug, or drugs that can limit the impact of feelings of love and heartbreak, and the ethics surrounding those drugs as they may emerge onto the market. We want to hear from you. Would you ever take something like this? Was there a situation in your life where, looking back, you would have loved to have taken a pill to numb that heartache after a breakup? Are you excited by this idea, or do you find it a little creepy? Call in now and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, talk@WPR.org, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're picking up our discussion with Brian Earp from Oxford University about research he's doing into the possibility of an anti-love drug. He's also looking at the ethical implications of drugs that remove some of the impact of heartbreak or unrequited love, maybe. We're taking your calls now. Have you ever been in a situation where you might have considered taking something like that if it had been available? Something to take the sting out of that breakup? Why or why not? Do you have philosophical or ethical thoughts or questions about this concept? Call in now and share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page. We'll go to our callers now. We've got Mary on the line in Cedarburg. Mary, hi.
Hello.
What do you think about this?
Well, I just wanted to say that I think the whole idea is very dangerous, and it could be very dehumanizing. I know I haven't had a lot of rough emotional patches of my life, so I feel like I might not be as qualified as somebody who's lived a very hard life to talk about such a thing. But I think that emotions and our own control of our own emotions is one of those things that makes us very human, and it's very important to help us grow as people, to be hurt and to understand that hurt and to work through it and let it make us stronger. So I think that a sort of drug like this would be very harmful from a, I guess, philosophical, ethical standpoint.
Mary, thanks for the call. And Brian, that's echoing a little bit of what you were saying just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, that's right. With any new drug or technology, there's the possibility for misuse and abuse. One example is antidepressant medication. Sometimes people take this drug as a way to kind of numb their feelings rather than facing their sadness. But at the same time, I think there are some people for whom antidepressant medication is the difference between being able to function and participate in life at all, and being kind of gripped by a debilitating sadness. And so I think in extreme cases where the value of the suffering is probably not going to be instrumental to improving the person's life and helping them learn, then there could be an argument in those cases for using these drugs. But I agree with the caller that they're certainly not the sort of thing that should be used flippantly as a way to avoid dealing with these core human problems.
I know you consider some possible misuses, thinking of maybe a parent not liking the love interest of their teenage kid or wanting to keep a kid focused on schoolwork and not crushes. How could something like this be misused?
Yeah, I think because there is that sort of danger, it's really important to emphasize that these drugs should be taken voluntarily, if at all. But you can imagine some cases where it might really help someone achieve an important goal in terms of changing their emotions or their inner feelings. So an example of this is, let's say we were talking about someone who had sexual attraction to small children, somebody with pedophilic desires. Well, many people who have these feelings don't want them. They didn't choose them. They didn't wake up one morning and say, I really want to be attracted to small children. And some of them even have a really hard time controlling their behavior that's inspired by these feelings. And here's a case of a person who might say, if I could take a drug, if I could take some kind of substance that would help me remove these feelings of sexual attraction to someone that I might harm by acting on those feelings, and they were to volunteer to do that, I think that would be a morally justifiable action. At the same time, we have a long history of, you know, psychiatric doctors labeling people with diseases and sort of forcing drugs on them, as happened for a long time with homosexuality. It was defined as a disease, an aggressive treatment, sometimes with biochemistry and technology, that could be very damaging and very harmful to people. So when we're dealing with really contentious technologies like this, we would certainly want to start out by strongly emphasizing the value of voluntariness, that the person would have to choose to do it and that they'd have good reason to do it.
We'll go back to our callers now. We've got Tracy on the line in Milwaukee. Tracy, hi.
Hi. I was calling to share my experience when I was put on antidepressants when I was in a very difficult time and I was diagnosed with PTSD. And at first I was really hesitant to go on the medication for some of those reasons, it taking away sexual desire and desire for romantic involvement. But it actually turned out to be such a relief, because it was such a difficult time in my life that I didn't have to worry about that. And it wouldn't have been a good time to get in a relationship. And it was a little bit like I imagine taking an appetite suppressant if you were trying to diet. That need wasn't there, and I could focus on what I needed to do just to get better.
And Tracy, if I can ask a very personal question, did you take it just for a time in that difficult patch, or is it something you stayed on for quite a while?
I ended up staying on it. Things definitely got better, but I tried to go off it, and I just didn't feel as good. So I've ended up staying on it. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, I did switch to one that had less of those side effects. Okay. So, yep, I'm in a healthy relationship. I'm engaged. So it hasn't affected me long term.
Okay. Well, Tracy, thank you so much and for letting me pry there, too. And I'm happy that it turned out well for you. I could see some people just doing something like this for a short time, what we're calling on the show anti-love drugs, to get through a rough patch, or maybe going longer term as Tracy did for PTSD, Brian.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think the ideal case for any kind of drug that's potentially powerful, that's potentially has side effects, is to use it for a short period of time, long enough to kind of engage with those bigger picture questions about getting your life back on track. But of course, for some people, as illustrated by the case of the caller, sometimes a low dose that's used continuously throughout a long period of time may really help the person engage fully in life. And sometimes there's this notion that some drugs can be a threat to authenticity. And I think this was the problem raised by the caller about our humanness, sort of a similar idea. But of course, sometimes if you consider yourself, you know, at your core to be a kind of lively person who's engaged in life, but you find something like depression or you find something like some of these problems kind of inhibiting you from participating in life in the way that you see as being true to yourself, you could actually imagine that sometimes the use of a drug could help you feel more authentic. In other words, it could make you feel like yourself rather than like somebody who's overcome or overtaken by feelings that are not productive or that seem alien and that seem like they're sort of taking you over in a way. So it's going to be different for everybody. And drugs are never going to be a silver bullet. They always run the risk of being overprescribed. They always run the risk of having pharmaceutical companies trying to make money off of, you know, spreading disease labels that don't need to be spread around or that aren't accurate. So there are always dangers involved. But I think when we hear cases like the case described by the caller just now, we can remember that in some instances, these drugs can really make a big difference. And the key for ethics is to try to figure out how to increase the use of drugs for the cases where it really works and really is a good decision, and to really try to get rid of the use of drugs where they're abused or misused or being used as a crutch rather than as an instrument to flourishing.
If I know one thing about brains, Brian, it's that they're really complicated. I know the same antidepressant can affect two different people very differently. Does that make it really hard to target these solutions in the realm of love as in depression?
Yeah, definitely. So my colleagues and I have done some work, not just on anti-love drugs, but on what you might call love drugs. In other words, substances that could potentially enhance states of mind or behavioral dispositions that could improve a relationship. And one drug that's commonly referred to in this conversation is oxytocin, which is a brain chemical that's released during sex and orgasm, and as well as in some other circumstances. And the point about about oxytocin is that you can now spray it up your nose. It exists as a synthetic substance that you can kind of spray directly into the brain. And people thought about it initially as kind of a love drug, an enhancement drug, a pro-social drug. But what they found out more recently is it has very different effects on different people. And it kind of depends on what your personality style and traits are. So, for example, if you have a very aggressive personality style, what oxytocin can do for some people like this is actually increase their aggressiveness. So you can imagine if you're in a relationship where you're trying to take oxytocin with your partner, you know, with a counselor, let's say, sometime in the future, and the idea is to try to improve the relationship or increase the feeling of attachment, but actually it ends up just enhancing someone's aggressive tendencies in an already abusive relationship. Well, that would be a terrible intervention. You know, a drug's just strengthening what's already problematic about the relationship. So for any of these drugs to be used in a way that's beneficial rather than harmful, it's not going to be enough to just prescribe them willy-nilly, but rather to be very careful about who is taking them, what is the specific problem in the relationship, is the drug going to be the best strategy for addressing that problem, maybe in conjunction with other kind of non-pharmaceutical treatments. All those questions would have to be asked, and it's not the sort of thing that can be decided at an abstract level. It's very much going to hinge on the specifics.
Briefly, Brian, are we going to see new drugs along these lines coming out soon, or existing drugs repurposed and prescribed for the things we're talking about anytime soon?
Yeah, so that's interesting. A drug just is a drug, and what we think it's for is what we, you know, package it for. Mm-hmm. But the question is, what effects does it have? Oxytocin is currently being trialed as a sort of pro-relationship drug. That's happening. And there is currently the use of drugs to block libido for people with, as I described earlier, pedophilic tendencies. And so already these drugs do exist. I think that the research is going to become more concentrated and more focused on possible relationship drugs. And I think we're likely to see that in the coming years.
Brian, we'll leave it there, but we may talk to you again about those pro-love drugs sometime. Thanks so much for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. Take care.
That was Brian D. Earp, research fellow at the Oxford Uehiro Center for Practical Ethics.